Good afternoon. I'll call to order meeting the State Government Budget Conference Committee for Senate File 2082. We do have a quorum present. As we start off today, we'll start with introductions first of all, and then I've got a few announcements to make before we start getting into the bills. I'm Don Betzelman of the Minnesota State Senate. I'm the Senate Chair of the State Government Budget Division. And for the Senate members, as you introduce yourself, please, for the benefit of the House members, identify who your two representatives are. That's how you are identified in the House of Representatives. So my representatives are Tom Tilbury and Tim Sanders.
Okay. I'm Kevin Lundeen, the fiscal analyst for the Senate.
I'm Kathleen Lonergan. I'm the committee administrator for the Senate Government State Government Budget Division.
I'm Amos Briggs. I'm the legislative assistant for Senator Bessel.
Rick Olson, state senator for District 17, and my House members are Rob Eastland and Representative Jeremy Kalin. So happy to be here.
Mike Jungbauer, state senator, District 48. My representatives are Tom Hackbarth and Jim Abler.
Craig Sunday, Senate Republican Research.
Jeff Myers, the Senate Majority Research.
And let me turn it over to Representative Kahn.
Representative Phyllis Kahn, and I'm the chair of the State Government Finance Committee in the House. And my senator is Senator Pogano.
I'm Helen Roberts, the House of
Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
Brian Shackleton, Committee Administrator for State Government Finance.
Kristen Niederhofer, Representative Kahn, Secretary
of Steve Diamond, State Rep from St. Louis Park and Hopkins. My state senator is Ron Lass.
Ryan Winkler from St. Louis Park in Golden Valley. My state senator is also Senator Lass and Senator Betzold. I wouldn't feel my legislative session was complete if we weren't on a conference committee together.
Or multiple conferences.
Representative Keith Downey from Edina. My senator is Jeff Michelle.
Luke Cool, DFL House Research.
Bob Shipman, House Republican Research.
Thank you. I am told that in this particular room, our cell phones have some problems because, first of all, we are so far below the ground that it's difficult to make calls. But more important, especially people who are near the table, if you have a cell phone and it goes off, it does interfere with the equipment. That's what I'm told. So if you happen to have a cell phone, you may need to have it turned off while we are down here. Just a couple of, I'm going to lay out where we're going to be going for the next few days here. Tonight we'll be reviewing the ceremonial side-by-sides, going through the spreadsheets and the bills. I imagine that's probably as far as we're going to be able to get today. As you may know, under the joint rules of the House and the Senate, we have a new rule that allows for the rotation of the chair each 24 hours. And I've talked to Representative Kahn about this. The Senate is planning on meeting not only today, but then the next time we would be chairing, it would be on Saturday. I have a commitment that I have to be at on Saturday evening that I made many months ago, and I said, whatever's happening, I'm going to be there. So I can pretty much assure you that we will be done on Saturday by about 4 p.m. I'll let Representative Kahn outline what her plans are for the upcoming days when she has the gavel. I've been specifically asked that we set aside a time to talk about the e-licensing issue and we notify people ahead of time about that. And I'm anticipating we'll do that on Saturday. So to the extent, if there's a deal or anything like that, please let us know about that. But I want to get that issue resolved. And to the extent that people want to bring anything to our attention, we'll do that on Saturday. So, Representative Kahn, did you have any thoughts on when the House would be meeting when you have it?
Did you suggest a convening time on Saturday, or do you want to wait?
I'll hold off, Representative Kahn, on that because I'm interested in knowing how long we go on Friday before we set an initial time to meet on Saturday. The other problem that I've got from the Senate side is, frankly, that three of my conferees, Senator Rest, Senator Olsen, Senator Jungbauer, are also on the Transportation Conference Committee. So I have to kind of coordinate their schedules and figure out, you know, when they're available. And that's one of the bills that has to be done by Saturday at 10 p.m. So I might have to during the time that I'm chairing be flexible to, so that they can get their work done, but that's going to mean we're going to have to work that much harder when we are here. But so I have to be a little bit flexible, but Saturday I can guarantee you that we will not go beyond 4 p.m. Does that sound?
Yes. Okay. The tomorrow, which is, and I, just to correct my Senate counterpart, the chair shifts by calendar day, not by 24-hour period. But the on Friday we will convene at 2 o'clock, and we'll see how long we'll go. I had some. Did you do 1:30? Okay, 1:30. Should have checked with staff on that. So 1:30 on Friday, and then the next time that the gavel passes to me is Sunday, and to try and make it a little humane for people, I think we'll convene, instead of convening sometime during the day on Sunday to allow people to get back here, I think we'll convene at 6 o'clock on Sunday.
Thank you.
And again, all these times will go until it doesn't seem productive anymore.
Representative Kubli has joined us. Did you want to identify yourself, and particularly identify, we ask you to identify your two, who your two House members are within your district?
Well, I'm Jerry Kubli. I represent Senate District 20. The 20B representative is Lyle Kuhn. The 20A representative is Andrew Falk.
And we've also been joined by Tom Bodern, who is our Senate counsel. If there's nothing else to be brought to our attention at this time, I'd like to get the fiscal analyst to go through the budget spreadsheet so we can see the differences between the two bodies on the budget areas. So who will start? Ms. Roberts?
I will start. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members, you have the spreadsheet in your packet. We're going to be starting on the third page of the handout. The third page of the handout where the detailed tracking portion starts. The first entity that's funded in both bills is the legislature. Starting with the Senate has a 5% operating budget reduction, which is the same as the governor's recommendation. The House also picked up that 5% operating reduction. For the House, the Senate and the governor have a 5% operating reduction. The House has a 3% recommended operating reduction to its own budget. And then moving on to the LCC, you'll see the same difference where the governor and the Senate have a 5% operating budget reduction, and the House position is a 3% reduction to the LCC. And I won't go through the detailed line items unless members request that. We have tried to break it out for the three major offices within the LCC, the legislative auditor, the reference library, and the revisor's office. Moving on to the next page, for the House, change items for the LCC. In addition to the operating budget reduction, there are two other small one-time change items. The first is $16,000 provided to the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy for their expenses related to the meetings they've had on and will continue to have on federal stimulus oversight. And then $10,000 in one-time funding for the Minnesota, Dakota, and Manitoba Legislators Forum.
Okay, and the one change item that the Senate had under the LCC was Senate File 182 dealing with the Redistricting Commission. Just the money is contained in this bill. This language is a bill of Senator Pogamiller's that is traveling separately, which has the redistricting principles and creates the Redistricting Commission.
And may I suggest it might help sometimes if you just identify the line number you're on, too, in case we lose track of where we're at. So, like, for instance, the redistricting was line 76. No, please proceed.
Okay, then moving down next to the governor's office, which starts on line 99. The change items, both the Senate and the House have moved. The governor's office has done some interagency agreements to pay for the D.C. office and to pay for some of the staff in the office. And so both have it in there. We have it in at a slightly different number. I think it's just the difference had to do with the way we were calculating it. I think the thought behind both the way the House and Senate were approaching it were similar. And then looking at line 105, the operating budget reduction, that both the House and the Senate have the governor's recommended 5% reduction. The next item, moving down on line 114, is the state auditor. And if we turn to the next page of the spreadsheet, down on line 143 are the change items. The governor recommended a 5% reduction to the budget of the state auditor. The House did not include that, but the Senate did. And then both the Senate and the House provided money for the stimulus funds reporting and oversight audits. There is a difference in the dollars that were provided. The Senate provided a total of $728,000, and the Senate, or the House rather, provided $680,000. And both of these items are, when we get down to the revenues, there are the audit fees that offset the cost of them. I'll let Ms. Roberts take the Attorney General.
Okay. Continuing on page 3 for the Attorney General. If you move to the bottom of the page on line 178, you'll see that the House and Senate have both adopted the governor's recommended 5% operating budget reduction. Underneath this, I'm sorry, this wasn't labeled, but the additional funding in the House bill, the $792,000 for the biennium, is some partial funding for House File 7, which was Representative Winkler's bill, and House File 8, which was Representative Hyman's bill. Partial funding in comparison to what the Attorney General had asked for in their fiscal note.
That was false claim. Okay.
House File 8.
Gotcha.
House File 7 is, what's the title of that?
Mr. Chair, House File 7 creates a clarification in the law that misappropriation of state funds is a crime, and it clarifies references from the legislative auditor to the Attorney General's office and to the county attorney for potential civil recovery as well as criminal charges.
Okay, thank you. Let's proceed.
Moving on to page 4 to the Secretary of State. The House and Senate have identical positions for the Secretary of State. This includes some technical changes that the fiscal staff worked out with the Secretary of State's office and Department of Finance on lines 201 and 202. And then, in addition, the operating budget reduction recommended by the governor of 5% or $622,000. And both bills also include the temporary technology surcharge, which is a special revenue fund item, and you'll see that noted on line 211. And I think I'll let Mr. Mundine explain the campaign finance board because the Senate has more of the changes for that agency.
Okay, the change items for the Campaign Finance Board start on line 216. The first is the operating budget reduction that was recommended by the governor, and both the House and the Senate took that. Then in addition to the reduction, the Senate increased the budget by an additional $50,000 a year. And then also the public subsidy for the state elections campaign funds, which in current statute is a statutory appropriation. We have moved that to a direct appropriation and reduced it by the $100,000 that's going to the operating budget of the Campaign Finance Board. And I'll kind of move down the sheet here to the open appropriations because this all kind of ties together and it gets a little bit confusing. So when you look down on line 228, you see the appropriation change from statutory to direct, and that is the direct appropriation of $1,020,000 I was talking about above. And what the Senate does then is just to fund that for fiscal year 11, and in the tails, that appropriation is totally reduced and taken away. And then the other change that we did to that was there is current language in statute dealing with the campaign complaints in the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is a transfer from this appropriation. And what we've done instead is made a direct appropriation to the Office of Administrative Hearings for this cost. And so then, as you can see, the public subsidy is totally reduced statutorily, and then in the tails it's gone. We did not make any changes to the checkoff on the tax form. That still continues as it is in current law. The next item on, if you look at line 236, is the investment board, and there were no changes to the budget there. Administrative hearings is down on line 248, and the one change item under the administrative hearing portion of this budget is dealing with the campaign complaints, just making that a direct appropriation to administrative hearings. And then the only other change is the governor's recommended 5% reduction under the municipal boundary adjustment unit, and both the House and Senate took the governor's recommended reduction. Moving down to the Office of Enterprise Technology, the change items the governor recommended the data center consolidation. That was not picked up by either the Senate or the House.
The House did not provide general fund money for the data center consolidation, but you will see later within the Department of Administration a $250,000 appropriation from a special revenue fund for pre-design for the data center consolidation.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Lindin?
Okay, and then the next change item down on line 283 is the electronic licensing, and both the Senate and the House did include that. Then moving down to the enterprise IT security and on to the change items on line 291. The Senate did make some reductions there. The base appropriation was reduced in half in fiscal year 10 and then completely reduced in fiscal year 11 and going out into the tails. And there's language contained in the bill asking the Chief Information Officer and the Commissioner of Finance to come up with a plan and implement a plan to do a charge back to state agencies for this cost. The next item down on line 298 is the operating budget reduction, which both the House and the Senate took at the governor's recommended level. And then if you look down on line 306, that internal service fund, that is just reflecting the chargeback for the security that I mentioned. And I'll let Ms. Roberts take the Department of Administration.
Okay. Beginning again on page 6 with the Department of Administration, I'll note that throughout the department there, the governor had a recommended budget, operating budget reduction that in most instances, the House and the Senate also adopted that, although there are a few differences we'll point out. Beginning on line 15, this is actually a Senate change item, eliminating the statewide advocacy network grant, an additional reduction. On line 321, you'll see that the House and Senate are identical for the operating budget reduction for the Office of Enterprise Performance Improvement. And then the Senate position includes an additional cut, eliminating all funding for that program. Moving down to the Environmental Quality Board, beginning on line 327, the Senate has adopted the governor's recommendation for the operating budget reduction. The House does not have any reduction to the EQB, and I believe some of the discussion related to the governor's proposal to transfer all of the functions to the EQB, and that the House did not do that and didn't pick up any reductions related to that. Moving down to line 341, again, you'll see another small operating budget reduction to the Land Management Information Center, LIMIC, and the House and Senate have both picked up the governor's reduction on that. The same for materials management on line 346. And moving on to page 7, the next change item is the on line 357, the in lieu of rent increase. The governor had recommended a $1 million increase to this appropriation. The House has funded it, and the Senate does not. Again, moving down to line 368, this is the real property system, which members that are continuing in this committee may remember that this was originally funded 2 years ago. This is the governor had requested continued funding for the operation of this system, the Senate does not have any funding for it. The House does not have any direct general fund appropriations for this, but the House language does establish a special revenue account that would allow administration to accept agency contributions to help the project go forward. On the next line, 369, again, you'll see a governor's recommendations and operating budget reductions that both the House and Senate have picked up. On line 373 is the item I mentioned earlier, pre-designed for data center consolidation, $250,000 out of the special revenue fund. Moving down to 384, neither the House nor the Senate picked up the governor's recommendation for an increase in the SMART funding. Line 393, again, under the state demographer, a small reduction on both sides for the operating budget reduction. And I believe those are the differences for the Government and Citizens Services Program. Moving on to Administrative Management Services on the next page, page 8. Line 408, identical positions on an operating budget reduction again. Under financial management and reporting, on line 413, you'll see the governor had recommended $250,000 to continue the Office of Grants Management. The House includes a direct appropriation of $250,000 and also has language instructing the commissioner to recover that amount from various grants and deposit those revenues in the general fund. I believe the Senate has a very similar position. They're technically different and written somewhat differently, but I think the goal is the same. And then on line 414, the House has a small one-time item of $25,000 for a report on innovation and collaboration. And I think those are the main differences within the Department of Administration. Did I miss anything?
No.
Okay. Moving on to the Capital Area and the Architectural Planning Board, line 487, the House and Senate have both picked up the governor's recommended reduction for the Cap Board of 5%.
Okay, continuing on with the Department of Finance or Minnesota Management and Budget, looking at down on the change items on line 501, both the House and Senate picked up the governor's operating budget reduction. The House then included some dollars for the stimulus funds reporting and oversight in the amount of $500,000. The Senate did not include anything in this bill. And then the governor also had a recommendation for the financial oversight and assistance. This was kind of for the internal auditors and that. The House did pick up that request. The Senate did not include that in this bill. And then moving down to line 508 under the accounting services, the governor's recommendation for the MAPS replacement with the lease purchasing financing, the Senate did not pick it up. The House did pick it up but delayed it a year. It's starting in fiscal year 11 instead of in fiscal year 10. The next item on line, I believe would be 526. Both the House and the Senate took up the operating budget reduction recommended by the governor. Then moving down to line 538, the Senate had an elimination of the management analysis general fund dollars for this program. And moving down human resources on line 543, both the House and the Senate took the 5% reduction that was recommended by the governor. And I think moving down to line 552, again, another of the operating budget reductions recommended by the governor were taken by both the House and the Senate. And then moving down to the statewide insurance, the House had the domestic partners' health insurance eligibility included. And that pretty much wraps it up for the Department of Finance. I'll let Ms. Roberts do the Department of Revenue.
Okay. I'm not going to go through each of the individual operating budget reductions for all the program activities within the Department of Revenue. The House and Senate have both picked up the governor's recommendation, which I believe was a 5% reduction, but it was applied only to the non-compliance portion of the agency. The two main differences between the House and Senate for the Department of Revenue begin on page 11, line 642, the completion of the integrated tax system. Again, this is a completion of a project that was originally funded 2 years ago by this committee. The governor had requested $4.2 million to cover the lease purchase payments through his lease purchase proposal, and the House has does have that included in their bill. And then the second major item, you'll see the first part of this on line 658, is a new compliance initiative. So line on page line 58, the $5.7 million is the first piece of that. Within that program, there's an additional appropriation on the next page on line 673. The appropriations for this compliance initiative total $7.5 million. It's expected to bring in for the 10-11 biennium, $30.1 million in additional general fund revenue. That's a net to the general fund of $22.5 million, and it uses a 4-to-1 ratio. Moving on to the Lawful Gambling Control Board, the House and Senate are identical on the recommendation for direct appropriations from the Special Revenue Fund. The House does have an additional provision that was an amendment to the bill of $225,000 per year for a compulsive gambling grant. And I believe this is one-time money. Again, moving on to the Minnesota Racing Commission, I'm on page 12 now, line 778. The House and Senate are identical to the governor for the recommendation from the Special Revenue Fund. And moving on to the Amateur Sports Commission, here again, the House, Senate, and governor are the same in the recommendation for the Amateur Sports Commission operating budget of $540,000 per year. This includes on line 789 of partials of space restoration. And both bills also include the elimination of the Target Center open appropriation of $1.5 million.
Okay, the next items we move on to the Black Minnesotans Council. The 5% reduction that was recommended by the governor was taken by both the House and Senate. The same with the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. The 5% recommended by the governor was taken in both the Senate and House bills. The Asian Pacific Minnesotans Council, the 5% reduction recommended by the governor was taken. Moving down to the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, the House had one item there for Indian burial sites and unfunded federal mandates. They had funding of $32,000 a year, and this was ongoing funding. And then both the House and the Senate took the governor's recommendation of the 5% operating budget cut. The next item is the contingent accounts on line 840. The Senate didn't provide any additional funding. The Senate did. The governor had a recommendation for some federal stimulus match contingency dollars, and the House put in $1,775,000 for that. The next item, the tort claims, on line 851, there were no changes. And then we have the various retirement appropriations. There were no changes to those. And then we have the cap on the state lottery. That is as was recommended by the governor. So I think if you move down to the totals down there on line 902 of the direct appropriations, you can see the difference between the general fund direct between the Senate and the House. The House appropriated about $21.5 million more of general fund dollars. And then you can see for the rest of the non-general fund direct appropriations there. And then we have the open appropriations detailed there, and the differences showing up there would be the differences for the lease purchase, funding for MAPS, and the integrated tax system. And then there were a couple of general fund appropriation reductions. If you look on line 941, these were kind of some general across the board. The first item that was included in the Senate bill was we have language in there when we made a direct appropriation to fund the governor's office for the staff and the DC office. And we have language in there requiring reductions from those agencies that have been involved in the interagency agreement. So that totals almost $1.5 million for the biennium. And then the House has language in there reducing some of the managerial and unclassified positions, and that totals about $16.5 million for the biennium.
Moving down, we'll walk through the revenue changes for the general fund. On line 947, here you'll see the offsetting revenues for the House and Senate positions on the state auditor, the additional funding that was provided for oversight of the federal stimulus money. On line 948, the Senate has a one-time balance transfer out of the facilities repair and replacement account of $2.2 million. And then right below that, for $8.1 million, an ongoing transfer out of that account. I believe that account is it eliminated or is
the we basically eliminate the account.
On line 950, the Senate has a position of $1 million one-time transfer from the tax increment enforcement account in the state auditor's office. On line 951, here you'll see the revenues for the House, the $250,000 to offset the cost of the Office of Grants Management. And again, as we move through, you'll see the Senate has a very similar position, just technically treated a little bit differently. Moving on to the last page of the spreadsheet, the first two items at the top of the page on line 952 and 953, the state land sales extension. This relates to a provision that was originally in the 2005 state government finance bill, where the bill set a goal of $6.4 million for sale of state land. Department of Administration oversees sort of the sales of that, the land sales, but the goal was backed up by operating budget cuts to all state agencies. As of, and you may remember last year, all agencies are participating in trying to sell state land. The DNR has sold several parcels. Admin has sold some, but there's still $4 million left to be made against that goal. 2 years ago in this bill, we shifted that goal forward two more years, and again, the House is picking up, similar to a governor's rec, although not identical, of moving forward $2 million of that goal into the 10-11 biennium. And what you see is online. Well, on line 953, you actually see the negative is a revenue loss because that anticipated revenue that was going to come into the general fund, we're acknowledging that's not going to happen within the 09 biennium, and then moving that expected gain forward into 10-11. So this really nets out to a zero within the target. And I should just also note that there's been some testimony that the DNR is going to try to at least move somewhat near achieving the remaining $2 million with the land sale at the end of May. On line 954, here you'll see the additional tax compliance revenue that's in the House bill, the $30.1 million. On line 955, the House and Senate are both identical in some additional general fund revenue from business filing fees within the Secretary of State's office. And then the line underneath that, the $6,000, again, is a technical change. Moving on to the non-general fund revenues on line 960, here you'll see it was mentioned earlier, the $1.95 million from the temporary technology surcharge within the Secretary of State's office. On my 961 is the revenue from the IT security chargeback to state agencies that Mr. Lundeen mentioned. On my 962, the House and Senate are identical to the governor. This is the revenue for the Minnesota electronic licensing system, the fees that would come in from that proposal. On line 963, the cooperative purchasing expansion, there's some additional revenue that would occur within an internal service fund within the Department of Administration, and the House has, I don't believe it's identical to the governor's language, but very similar to the governor's language on this, which is why we're showing the revenue. 964, $4 million licensee ratification within the Racing Commission. And then the last two items, you'll see the large new fund items, $69.9 million for MAPS and $16.5 million are the funds that would come in for the lease purchasing arrangements for those two items. And finally, on line 970, here's the Senate position on the Office of Grants Management, the $250,000 offset. And I guess I'll just do the general fund reconciliation at the bottom of the spreadsheet. You can see the differences on the direct appropriation. Again, the House is $21.5 million above the Senate in direct general fund appropriations, the difference in the open appropriations, and then the general reductions that Mr. Lundeen noted earlier. So the bottom line, the Senate is at $579.257 million, and the House is at $588,177. That's a $1.9 million difference between the two bills.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? And I do have one question. We did not get any information from the Department of Revenue on the tax compliance. Could you just run again? I think Ms. Roberts, you indicated there'd be a 4-to-1 ratio. What numbers are you booking for? How much it would cost you, and how much you would get back for doing tax compliance?
The total appropriations would be $7.5 million. That's split between two programs within the Department of Revenue. And then the anticipated revenues for the biennium is $30,075,000.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions regarding the spreadsheet? Seeing none, then maybe we can move on to the bills itself. We've got Mr. Bodden and Mr. Shepherd who can walk us through language here, and who's prepared to start? Mr. Bodden, why don't you start off?
Mr. Chairman, I'll take it as a side-by-side and move fairly quickly through the riders since most of that has been discussed in the course of looking at the spreadsheet. Beginning on page R3, there are some different items under the House of Representatives on the House side, and actually perhaps Mr. Shepherd should explain those.
Mr. Chair and members, on the House side, on line 2.29 provides that any revenues that the House receives from sponsorship notices in broadcast or print media are appropriated to the House. And second, there's on 3.1 requires the House to develop a system under which House members and employees would have electronic access to their payroll information.
Then, Mr. Chairman, moving ahead to page R4, on the Senate side, beginning on line 3.7, there is a contingent appropriation, and just wanted to point out this is the wording here is dependent on the enactment of Senate File Number 182 for the Redistricting Commission. And then the House has a $10,000 appropriation for the Legislators Forum. Moving ahead to the page R5, there are some differences in the language provided for the Governor's Office. The language being on line 3.22 on the Senate side is a holdover from previous budget bills, and it's basically a reporting requirement for the use of interagency agreements. And that language doesn't appear on the House side, perhaps because of the language shown at Section 6 on the House side of R5. And, well, maybe Mr. Shepherd would like to explain that one.
Mr. Chair, members, that the House provision, which was actually in the would be a permanent codified provision, not just a rider, provides that any personnel costs attributable to the governor's office would have to be accounted for through an appropriation to the office of the governor, and it forbids entering into agreements with other executive branch agencies under which personnel costs would be supported by appropriations to other agencies.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on the bottom half of the Senate side of R5, the Senate did this in rider form, what is very similar, and basically increased the appropriation for the, it's not similar in the respect that it increases the appropriation for the Office of the Governor, but then it directs the Commissioner of Finance to subtract the amounts supported by appropriations to other agencies during fiscal years 2010 and 11 from those appropriations. Then, turning ahead to R6, the language under the state auditor is, I think...
May I ask for something? Chairman? Is that subtraction taken care of any place in the spreadsheet, Senator?
Yes, we are showing it at the end under the revenues, that it would be going to the general fund.
On the last page then? The last page.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, returning to page R6, the language for the state auditor compliance related to the stimulus bill, the federal stimulus bill, I think is fairly similar. Mr. Shepard may want to comment if there are any important differences. There's also a $1 million appropriation from the tax increment financing enforcement account that was discussed in the course of the walkthrough of the spreadsheet. The next item I will point out for you is at the bottom of page R7. There's a rider for the Office of Enterprise Technology, and this is how the Office of Enterprise Technology is directed to prepare a cost recovery plan to bill state agencies for the cost of the security and provide a report to the legislature concerning that. That's basically advanced planning. And then on page R8, at the top of R8, there's identical language on both sides relating to some language in a previous budget bill directing savings from an electronic licensing system and information technology security improvement, and that language is rendered inoperative. I will move through identical riders unless anyone has questions. The next item I will draw to your attention would be the on page R11 on the Senate side, and Mr. Shepard should stop me if I skip by anything on the House side, I'll point that out. But on the Senate side at the bottom of R11, the language directing the Office of, appropriating money for the Office of Grants Management on the Senate side basically directs that the Commissioner deduct an amount from state grants to yield that amount and provide some limitations on that. It cannot exceed the 0.5% of the amount of the grant, and grants made by Health and Human Services or that include federal stimulus funding are exempt from that requirement. And the House does something fairly similar, I think, in a more general form. And then Mr. Shepard may want to discuss the House language on the top of R12 for the Office of Grants Management.
Mr. Chair, this is the language that accompanies the spreadsheet item that Mr. Lundeen and Ms. Roberts mentioned earlier for a study that would be conducted by the Office of Grants Management.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I will move through the remainder of the riders. They're really, for the most part, either identical or substantially similar. On R19, on the Senate side, there's a standalone provision, Section 31, that contains a prohibition on the use of any appropriation in this article for out-of-state travel not directly connected with or necessary to carry out the core functions of an agency or constitutional office. And there are some additional standalone items on the House side of that page.
And, Mr. Chair, those items are on the House side. Section 30, the House appropriates money from the Lottery Prize Fund to the Gambling Control Board. And on Section 31 is the language that implements what Ms. Roberts referred to earlier about the managerial position reductions in the executive branch and the amount of savings that would be achieved.
I do happen to know on that one, there's similar language in a Senate bill, Senate File Number 2, that I think is in the Senate Rules Committee right now. So there is language around, it's not in this bill, however. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll let Mr. Shepard pick up the House side of Article 2.
Mr. Shepard.
Article 3, excuse me. Mr. Chair and members, on page R20 of the spreadsheet, section 1 on the House side is a House provision relating to the names of the state, the committees that deal with state government finance issues. Section 2 is a requirement that legislative appointing authorities offer their employees the option to telecommute or the option to work for 10-hour days during the legislative interims. Section 3 is the beginning of a series of sections that are based on initiatives of Representative Downey and Representative Winkler. These were House Files 2270 and 2257, and there's a number of sections that relate to review of financial management and controls in state government. This first one on Section 3 on the bottom of R20 adds some duties to the Legislative Audit Commission. On page R21, Section 4 is a provision that was part of House File 7, which was mentioned earlier, a companion to Senate File 107. As Representative Winkler described, this relates to provisions relating to misuse of state funds. And Section 5 on the bottom of R21 and the top of R22 is from the same bill, House File 7. On page R22, there's a provision relating to the state demographer. It's from House File 1225. The substantive part is actually on page R23 and requires the demographer to release a demographic forecast in connection with the November state economic forecast issued by the Commissioner of Finance. Mr. Chair, the next whole group of sections I'll summarize generally, and then I'll try to point out where I've seen a few differences. And I'm hoping Mr. Bodern will jump in because I haven't looked at this exhaustively. But these were all provisions relating to the business services section of the Secretary of State's office, and they are very similar on both sides. One difference I noticed on page R24, section 3 of each bill, the Senate had some references to copies that are images that are electronically transmitted. It's on page 13.19 and 13.22 of the Senate version, and those appear to be different from the House. On the next page, page R25, Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Bodder.
Mr. Shepard, I think we should point out on the top of R24 there are some differences in the collection of email addresses between the Senate and House language. At the very end of Section 2 on the Senate side, the last sentence reads that email addresses collected by the Secretary of State must not be provided as bulk data, and on the House side, there's, I think, a more elaborate opt-out provision provided for that information.
Yep. Thank you very much. I think that this was a provision that was had some attention from a number of House members as the bill progressed through the House. On the top of page R25, on the House side, lines 68.1 and 68.2, the House has a sentence that has an aggregate filing fee limit of $35,000, which I believe is not on the Senate side. Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing any differences, and Mr. Bodern can help me out if he's found any on R26. On R27, at the bottom of the page, there's a small technical difference, I think, where the House on page 19.3 provides that certain fees collected would be deposited as a non-dedicated receipt. The next page, the next section on R28 is a different issue. It does relate to the Secretary of State's office, but rather than the business service fees, this relates to complaints about international student exchange organizations, and it authorizes the Secretary of State to investigate them and also provides that an organization's registration with the Secretary of State automatically terminates if it fails to remain in compliance with laws. The next section, on section 9 on page R28, deals with the requirement for elected officials to sign their long-distance phone bills and provides that the monthly signature requirement doesn't apply if the bill for the month is less than $5. It then goes on to clarify that even though the elected official wouldn't need to sign, they would still have to pay any amount less than $5 that was for personal use. And it provides it references current law providing that all of this is public data, regardless of the amount of the bills. Section 10 on the House side provides that laws may not be named for living people and may not name councils, buildings, roads, or other facilities after living people. On the bottom of R28 and continuing on to R29 is a provision from House File 1018 that...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cleveland.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shepard, I guess I'm not seeing... I assume that is going forward on Section 10. We have the Cooper Sand Farm that deals with the emergency medical services, and former Representative Cooper is still living.
And I think there's a Douglas J. Johnson something up north.
I think so, yeah.
There's a couple of things. So I guess we'll talk about when we get to that particular point. Is it
all right?
Retroactive, prospective, what is it? But yes, okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the next provision on the bottom of R28 and the top of R29 is from House File 1018, speaking about the purpose of public websites and requiring that the homepage of a website maintained by a state agency has to provide contact information, including a telephone number, that will be answered during normal business hours.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on page R29 on the Senate side, Section 8 takes care of the somewhat complicated campaign finance and public disclosure board appropriation provisions that were discussed by Mr. Lundeen. The stricken language you see here basically eliminates the general fund appropriation to the general account of the state elections campaign fund. The bill does provide a one-time appropriation in the amount that is reflected in statute, and then also for lines 16.31 to 33, it provides a direct appropriation to the Office of Administrative Hearings for their unfair campaign practices work.
Mr. Chair, the next provision on the bottom of R29 and the new language on R30 relates to the State Board of Investment. It requires that the annual report contain information about fees paid to money managers. It also requires that report to contain an executive summary, and it provides that on the board's website, the annual and quarterly reports should be displayed. The next provision, Section 14, is one of several that relates to an executive branch initiative. It was House File 2146, Senate File 1297, that codifies an executive order transferring the duties of the Management Analysis Division to the Department of Finance, Minnesota Management and Budget. On section page R31, the top section 15 deals with provides that parking spaces on Aurora Avenue in front of the Capitol must be reserved for the public.
This is a new one. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the next all the way from R31 through R37. Through most of R37 is the False Claims Act, Representative Simon's bill, House File 8, it was Senate File 82. And I won't say anything more about those unless there are questions. That takes you over to page R37 at the bottom, Section 30 on the House side provides that the Department of Finance must be identified by that name unless there were another name assigned by law. At the bottom of page R37 and continuing on to the next page is a provision from the bill that were introduced by Representative Winkler and Representative Downey. This relates to financial controls in state government. There's some language stricken in this section because a more detailed section is provided a couple of sections later. Section 32 in the middle of the page is relating to the transfer of management analysis duties in House File 2146. Section 33 is from House File 20, another Representative Winkler initiative. I believe this, I think I saw this in Senate File 2 as well. This requires the state to have a website with a searchable database on state expenditures, and it specifies a variety of the information that has to be contained on that website. and that continues over to page R40, where section 34 is another section from Representative Downey and Winkler's initiative about internal controls and internal auditing in state government. This section specifies more detailed duties for the commissioner and the Department of Finance. And that continues over to the bottom of page R41, the same initiative. This section 35 on the House side creates a Financial Controls Council appointed by the Executive Council to provide certain duties related to financial controls in state government. Section 36 is a different topic on page R42 of the side-by-side. This relates to the governor's budget proposals, and it provides that a proposal for a new investment in information technology systems or equipment that would cost $100,000 or more has to be appropriated to the Office of Enterprise Technology. Section 37, continuing on page R43, is from the bill transferring duties relating to the Management Analysis Division. Section 38 on the House side, Section 9 on the Senate side, it was House File 1671 on the House. I believe these provisions look identical, and it deals with payroll deductions to multiple exclusive representatives of state employees. Section 39 on the House side is from Representative Winkler's House File 7 relating to misappropriation of state money. So is Section 40, continuing over to the top of page R44. On page R44, Section 41 in the middle of the page deals with deposit of litigation proceeds received by the state. Generally, the current law provides that these proceeds must be deposited in the general fund. There's an exemption in current law that the House bill strikes that provides an exemption for recoveries or settlements of less than $750,000. Section 42 on the bottom of R44, continuing to the top of R45, is from House File 2038, an initiative of Representative Solberg, requiring a report on the budget reserve percentage. That continues to the bottom of page R45, where the House bill has language that was contained in the original House File 1781 Governor's Initiative, the language that would implement the technology lease purchase financing. That continues on for several pages, all the way to the bottom of page R48. On R48, Section 45 is a requirement that an employer that is using state funds or federal funds, federal stimulus funds to hire new employees must use the E-Verify system to determine employment eligibility of new hires.
Mr. Chairman, that was an amendment that was added on the House floor. Since then, we've gotten several complaints about the problems of doing that.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple, but I wasn't familiar with what this was. Okay, thank you.
I think you Google E-Verify and you'll learn what it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next section on the bottom of 48 and continuing to R49 requires that state entities use standard letter-sized paper to print documents to the extent practical and may not use legal-sized paper unless it's the only possible size for a particular document.
Just on that point, it says judicial branch. I thought the judicial branch did that 20 years ago in the early 80s. So
they're doing I don't know what the date was. And Congress is doing it too, apparently.
I kind of remember because I became licensed to practice law in 1979, and just around that time they were making the switch. So I started off with a couple of legal-sized folders, but immediately switched to letter-sized because that's the way they were going. And these lawyers who bought all these big oaken file cabinets with letter size had to get rid of them. But so it was early 80s sometime, yeah.
Madam Chair, since legal drew this size, should we call this legal size and this some other size?
Illegal size.
Illegal, yeah. So. Well, we'll have some discussions about that, I'm sure. So. Okay. Okay, I guess Mr. Bottom probably will be picking up the rest on R49, is it?
Then, Mr. Chairman, on R49 on the Senate side, it's there's a lot of existing language there. Basically, the change you see in the stricken language at the bottom of that page captures all of the money in the asset preservation and replacement account for the general fund. And that continues over onto page R50. In the middle of R50, shown on the Senate side, you'll see the header there from Senate File 1464 is language that is nearly identical to Section 47 on the House side. I think the difference would be, and this is to the employee fitness and wellness language that basically allows employees in the executive, legislative, or judicial branch to use facilities held by those entities for fitness, wellness, or similar classes. On the House side, there is a sentence that provides that revenue received by a public entity under this section is appropriated to the entity. And that is about the only significant difference I found, unless Mr. Shepard found anything else. The Section 2 shown on the Senate side basically just requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to prepare a conforming amendment to rules adopted by the Commissioner. And I'm not sure, there may be a difference in the effective date. The Senate language is effective the day following final enactment. I don't think the House does that.
Mr. Chair, the next set of provisions, the next provision on the House side is on the top of page R51. The first section, 49, is, I believe, from the original House File 1781, the governor's bill implementing the enterprise real property account. The next provision provides that occupants of state-owned or leased buildings must attempt to reduce dangers posed to migrating birds by turning off lights between midnight and dawn, to the extent it's consistent with normal use of the buildings. Section 51 authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to sell naming rights to state buildings or meeting rooms with certain exceptions. Section 52, I believe this was added as a floor amendment on the House floor, provides that in entering into contracts for operation of cafeterias in the Capitol complex, the Commissioner would ensure, to the extent practicable and economical, that disposable utensils and plates are used and that they can be composted, and that when disposable utensils, plates, and containers are used, they'd be made of compostable materials and be collected in a manner that they can be composted. Section 53 authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to sell advertising on temporary fences or other temporary barriers adjacent to state construction or repair projects. Section 54 deals with the state motor pool and provides that that authorizes providing an unmarked car to the lieutenant governor. And then on the bottom of page R52 forbids the state from providing a car for use of the lieutenant governor. The bottom of page R52, continuing on to R53, is from House File 1225, and it requires the Commissioner of Administration to establish milestones and specifies what is to be contained in those and requires a report. Section 56, continuing on for the next several pages, is from House File 1981. It creates a geospatial information office under the supervision of the Commissioner of Administration, and later in the bill transfers the LIMIC to this office. That continues on to page R56. Section 57, toward the bottom of the page, I believe was added as a floor amendment on the House floor, dealing with state contracts. It provides that a person is not eligible to be awarded a contract or to sell any goods to a state agency if they've been convicted of a crime for knowingly employing illegal aliens in the United States.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on R57, there is substantially similar language provided in both the Senate and House for the implementation of the statewide electronic licensing system, and this basically requires the Office of Information Technology, or would allow them to establish an account and collect revenue from state agencies, a temporary surcharge from a temporary surcharge on licenses issued by those agencies, and that would include business, commercial, professional, and occupational licenses. The time frame provided here is identical. There is some language that you'll see on the House side, beginning on page on line 47.24 through the bottom of that paragraph, that refers to Department of Commerce licenses under Section 45.24 and would allow the department to basically make payment from funds already collected for those licenses in lieu of an additional surcharge. The Senate does the same thing, but just makes those changes in Section 45.24 of the statute that's shown later on the Senate side. At the bottom of the House language, there's Subdivision 4, and Mr. Shepherd can correct me if I'm wrong here. I think it looks like this priority provision here is a standalone House provision. It's picked up on the Senate side on the next page and on Subdivision 6. I'm not sure. I don't think Subdivision 4 on the House side does anything differently, and that would just require that licenses that are not already issued electronically are given priority and placement in the new system. And the Senate side has an additional exemption related to the statutory change that I referred to, shown in Section 45.24. And both the Senate and the House require provide a June 30th, 2017 expiration date for this.
Mr. Chair, that brings us down to the bottom of page R58. On Section 59, the House bill defines domestic partner. This is for purposes of Section 62, which I'll explain in a minute, dealing with state employee health insurance. Section 60 on page R59 deals with state employee donation to the sick leave account of another employee. It increases the maximum that can be donated from 12 hours a year to 40 hours. It also changes some of the administrative practices of the Department of Finance by establishing conditions for use of the donations that are received, among other things. The bottom of page 59 is a provision relating to sick leave for state employees who are veterans with service-related disabilities. It allows such an employee to apply to their appointing authority for additional sick leave to receive treatment for the disability, and it places some limits on the amount, 40 hours of sick leave in a fiscal year. Section 62, starting at R59, continuing on to R60, is the domestic partner issue again. The substantive language is on the top of page R60, and it provides that if a collective bargaining agreement or plan provides state-paid health insurance for spouses of state employees, the insurance must be made available to a domestic partner of a state employee on the same terms and conditions. This section's effective, you'll notice, January 1, 2012. The January 1 date was picked to match the state insurance year instead of our usual practice of basing things on state fiscal years. The next sections are very similar. They relate to extending an existing program into which state appointing authorities can give voluntary unpaid leave of absence. The Senate extends it for 2 years. The House makes this provision permanent. The House also makes a couple of technical changes that were requested somewhat well into the process by the Public Employees Retirement Association. Some of the judicial branch employees are in PERA, and there are apparently a few state employees in TRA as well. And so instead of just referring to MSRS here, we're referring generically to pension plans that cover state employees. On the top of page R61, the provision in the House side, Section 64, relates to the transfer of the management analysis duties to the Department of Finance.
And then, Mr. Chairman, at the bottom of page R61 is the language related to the license fees for the Department of Commerce that I referred to in the discussion of the statewide electronic licensing system earlier. You'll see the changes on R62 that just basically would allow the Commissioner of Commerce to use the funds already collected from an electronic licensing system to accomplish the transfer. There is some concern, I think, about the exact timing when that payment would be made. And the way it's written right now, it would be after the transfer of the licenses.
Mr. Chair, the next provision on R62 on the House side, the substantive language is on R63, and this is striking some obsolete language that relates to an environmental impact statement to be prepared for a project around July 1st, 1994. The next section, Section 66, requires the Metropolitan Council to consider for inclusion in the regional recreational open space system certain property in Minneapolis, and it prohibits rezoning or other land use actions with respect to the property until the legislature determines that it's not suitable for inclusion in the regional recreational open space system. Mr. Chair, the next cluster of sections, beginning on R63 and continuing all the way through to the bottom of page R68, are all from House File 817, that's a companion to Senate File 661, relating to some voter registration issues. This was a bill that Representative Kahn introduced, and these, unless there's questions, I won't go into the details of any of those right now. That goes all the way over to the bottom of page R68, where section 72 is a provision, again relating to the technology lease purchase appropriation that would be used to implement language in the House bill.
Then, Mr. Chairman, beginning on R69, we pick up again with the Secretary of State provisions related to business entity filings and procedures for those filings. That consumes a lot of paper here. I won't go into any detail, and I don't see any differences that are worth pointing out at the moment. That continues all the way through. I'm already ahead to R75 through R79, R81, and it'll take you all the way up to R83. There's a standalone house provision.
Mr. Chair, on R83, on section 73 on the House side, is a bill that was House File 2152 from Representative Pepin, and it relates to land acquisition and town consent in Hennepin County in the Three Rivers Park District.
Then, Mr. Chairman, beginning on the bottom of R83 and continuing on to R84, there's language from the tax increment financing chapters of the statute, and that's these were added, I think, in an amendment in the Finance Committee to the Senate bill. They are intended to provide savings for the state auditor by reducing reporting requirements for local government entities. They also subsequently reduce the audit requirements for the state auditor. That continues on to R85 all the way through R88, where there's a standalone House provision.
And Mr. Chair, that provision on R88 is section 74 of the House bill. This authorizes municipalities to contract for purchase of supplies, materials, or equipment through the state's cooperative purchasing venture. This was derived from House File 1423, which Representative Winkler sponsored. The next provision, Mr. Chair, section 75, continuing on to page R89, is another part of a provision that was added as a House floor amendment. This is parallel to a state provision that I mentioned earlier. It says that a person's not eligible to receive a solicitation or be awarded a contract under the Uniform Municipal Contracting Act if they have been convicted of a crime for knowingly employing illegal aliens in the United States. The next provision, Mr. Chair, is one that Ms. Roberts and Mr. Lundeen mentioned earlier. This is postponing the mandate to sell $6.4 million of state land by June 30th, 2009 until June 30th of 2011. The following provision, section 77, relates to obstacles. It's amending a 2005 session law relating to optical scan equipment. It makes an appropriation from the HAVA account available until 2012. Section 78 on the House side amends a 2007 session law relating to a sale of surplus land in Hennepin County. It authorizes the Commissioner of Natural Resources to sell the land to a government subdivision for no consideration under conditions specified in paragraph E, which provide for reductions in PILT payments if this section becomes operative.
Was this a bill or an amendment somewhere along the line? This is one I don't recognize.
This was an amendment. It's actually what it did. This, as you see, it's amending existing law.
Mm-hmm.
That existing law existed in the land in the landfill last year, I guess.
Okay.
And the person who brought it to us, this was so it had been brought up before at a place that we didn't know that.
I'm just wondering.
It was done as an amendment in committee.
I see.
In
thank
the
you.
Finance.
Yeah, thank
committee,
you.
I believe.
Okay. Thank you.
It's an amendment in the finance
okay.
committee. And I think there was a lot of the amendment in the finance committee was then amended, and there are questions as to whether this is in a good form or not. But no consideration is the issue was over the may versus the must, and the no consideration over some reasonable
sure.
consideration.
I was trying to remember where it came from, whether it was an amendment or a bill or something. Okay.
The legislator yeah. involved was Representative Beatrix, and
I see.
So what then?
Gotcha. That would it be, well, Senator Foley would represent that district, but as I say, this is
okay.
something I'm not familiar with. Okay, okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next provision is on page R91, section 80 on the House side. This is from House File 2038, Representative Solberg's bill, and it requires that the Commissioner of Finance prepare a report on cash flow condition of the general fund for the upcoming bienniums. Section 81 is from Representative Winkler's House File 1814. It deals with state employees' personal health records, and it provides some criteria that would have to be met for that system. Section 82 on page R92 requires the Management Analysis Division to study and report to the legislature on possible co-location of offices for the Council of Black Minnesotans, the Chicano Latino people, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and the Metropolitan Area Office of the Indian Affairs Council. Section 83 on the bottom of page R92 and continuing to R93 forbids transfer of the EQB duties or staff during the upcoming biennium. Section 84 comes from House File 625, Representative Gardner. It requires, this deals with a MAP system, and it provides that the system has to include an application programming interface that would give public access to the system's underlying data on state contracts, appropriations, and expenditures using an open format. Section 85, Mr. Lundeen and Ms. Roberts mentioned this earlier, this is ratification of racing license fees. It's identical in both bills. The next section is identical language. The Senate form is probably preferable, stating that executive agencies would consider using services provided by government training services before contracting with outside vendors for similar services. The bottom of R93 on the House side is from House File 1781, the governor's original bill, implementing language for the lease purchase authorization. That continues on to the following page, which also has language from the original governor's bill. It was House File 1781 on the enterprise real property contributions. Toward the bottom of R94 is a requirement that the Commissioner of Administration report to the legislature on savings in state agency costs for rental space that can be achieved by expected decreases in agency complement and that could be achieved by encouraging or requiring more telecommuting by state employees. Section 89 is part of Representative Kahn's House File 1981 relating to the transfer of duties from LIMIC to the newly created Geospatial Information Office. Section 90 on the top of page R95 requires the Chief Information Officer of OET to develop a report to the legislature on a plan to transfer from other state agencies to OET state employees whose work primarily relates to functions relating to state data centers, software, data networks, and office systems. It specifies information to be required in this report, including an estimate of the number of employees to be transferred, an estimate of the enterprise cost savings and potential improvements in operations, and a proposed transition plan and schedule. This section doesn't apply to MNSCU or to constitutional offices. The next two sections on the House side are revisor instructions. The first one relates to the transfer from LIMIC to the Geospatial Information Office. The next one is relates to the provision mentioned earlier about not naming laws after living people. The repealers on the House side 16C.046 is a repealer of the existing law requiring a web-based database showing state expenditures. That's repealed because Representative Winkler's bill has more specific language on that topic. 645.44, subdivision 19, is a repeal of the definition of fee and tax in Chapter 645 of Minnesota statutes. The repealer of 488.05 is a repeal of the existing law establishing LIMIC because it's transferred to the newly created Geospatial Information Office. 116G.151 is a repeal of some obsolete language relating to, this was either the steam plant or the conderator. I don't remember which. Conderator, okay. And 248.08 is identical language in both bills relating to repeal of the Target Center appropriation to the Amateur Sports Commission. The rest of the House bill, beginning on R96, is derived from two bills, House File 715, Representative Newton, and House File 557, Representative Severson. And generally what this does is provide a preference of 6% in state purchasing to small businesses that are majority owned and operated by veterans. The remainder of this article goes through and amends laws governing MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council to accomplish that same goal. Mr. Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the statutory language.
Okay, before we get further, Senator Rusk and Representative Solberg were not with us when we joined. I just wanted them to introduce themselves. And Senator Rusk, we also need to have the senators identify the House members that are within your district so that the representatives know. That's how we're identified, of course. So, Senator Rusk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ann Rusk from New Hope, and my reps are Glenn Carlson and Sandy Peterson.
Representative Solberg, Grand Rapids, and I test in Aiken County. And my other housemate is Representative Anzell. The Senate is Senator Saxdog, and his Senate district is about 300 miles long. It starts from the middle of Mille Lacs Lake and ends up at the northwest angle. I have the southern half of that, and Anzell the other part. You're welcome to come up and count the trees.
Okay. Are there any questions on the side-by-side? We're going to go, as they say, over the next few days, we're going to get quite deeper into those details. Let me just note for the House members, some of those provisions that are in your bill, I recognize as some issues that were Senate bills, we just have differences in how we wind up getting to where we're at because you've amended them into your bill as you went through the process. Our bills, I think some of them are still in our Finance Committee. One of them I know is in the Senate Rules Committee, so we have to figure out where they're at and how we're going to establish a set of positions in order to get there. So, but obviously, those are issues that we're going to have to talk about. So if I'm a little hesitant to get into some of those areas, just because I don't know what the Senate position is on some of them. So, anything else, Representative Kahn, do you have any thoughts as to anything else we need to do for today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I do have a general question in terms of as we're going through the side-by-side here. I'm noticing a lot of policy, especially from the House side, and I'm not just trying to point my finger at the House side here, but it seems to be policy issues that don't have really any logical connection to anything to do with the state government budget. And I wanted to ask up front is, how are we going to deal with these kind of policy issues? Because to me, and the way we normally do business, I guess, on the Senate side, don't seem to logically belong in this bill.
Representative Kahn.
I'm not sure. I think I guess I would first challenge you to point out anything that's in this, in the House language that doesn't have a connection to the budget. I think we're really fairly careful about that. The one thing I guess I think my committee was not responsible for, the Article 4, the whole section on veteran preferences, was added on the floor, replacing a kind of much more minor provision we had in the original bill, which we had worked out with the Department of Administration, which only dealt with disabled veterans. so it was a much smaller impact. So, and little problem.
To answer that, Representative Kahn, I would be happy to, as I, thank you, Mr. Chair, I would be happy, I marked up my copy, and I'd be happy to make something up for tomorrow's meeting with my questions and concerns, and then get that feedback from the House as to how that logically fit with the budget. So I'm just trying to lay that groundwork up front, because I want to make sure that, you know, we get those answers so I understand how we're moving forward on this.
Senator Jungbauer, my guidance and the guidance to the other budget divisions was to try to keep our bill basically related to the budget, and to that extent, you know, we did not have provisions that we deemed to be policy. Now, as I say, there's a difference between an issue, whether it's policy related or not. I guess, you know, I try to err on the side of, you know, just numbers and so forth. So, but that's at least how we prepared our bill. Any further discussion, as I say, I because our plan now is to go through the side-by-sides. I don't really, it's kind of hard to proceed until we have a plan here. Is anybody else got any suggestions at this point? Because I know staff has to start working on some things to identify what's similar and identical, so we can kind of get those things out of the way, and we don't want to give them the opportunity to do that. Representative Kahn, do you have any thoughts as to what your plan is?
We are, again, convening tomorrow at 1:30 in this room, and my plan would be, we know that there are sections that are very close to identical, or that have only minor differences, and my hope is that we could at least start to deal with those and maybe just get them off the plate totally.
Madam Chair, and in conference committees that we're kind of on a short time frame here, more than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we've asked the staff to, if there's some signed wording that is very, very close, for them to give us a recommendation of which one works best. We've already had such a thing from Mr. Shepherd saying that the Senate works best.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if the staff could identify those and give us some kind of a guidance on that would help speed things up.
Right. I particularly note the Secretary of State provisions are quite similar in both bills, and they take up a number of pages. So it sort of seemed to me if we can get, you know, that's an issue we could probably, you know, get out of the way in, I hope, fairly short order. But so I think certainly is that your intention, Representative Kahn, the next meeting, to start getting away these similar and identical things out of the way then. And as I indicated earlier, for those who may not have been here at the start of the meeting, the plan is, Representative Kahn, could you announce the plan for tomorrow?
Okay. Tomorrow we start at 1:30. We don't have a finishing time. I think at some point, like today's meeting, you see what a productive time to end would be. And then I guess, Chair Betzelt, your plan is then to call the start of the Saturday meeting based on what's happening Friday.
Right.
And the Saturday must end by 4.
Yeah. On Saturday, and here I have to kind of balance things a bit, because three of the Senate conferees, Senator Rest, Senator Olsen, Senator Jungbauer, on the Transportation Conference Committee, and although they're in the same building, they might as well be on the same planet, because if you're not here, you're not here. But that's one bill that has to be done by 10 o'clock Friday night. So I want to try to find out what their schedule is. So I want to find out what the schedule is there to try to, but I would certainly hope we can get started sometime in the morning, if we can, on Saturday morning. But I can guarantee you by about 4 p.m. we will be done here. I have a commitment on Saturday night that I made months ago I have to be at. So we'll plan on being done Saturday afternoon by about 4 o'clock, and then the House would be in charge from that point, and Representative Kahn again to do...
And then my plan, trying to be as humane as possible with people and also trying to get done in our short term, I thought we would reconvene Sunday evening at 6 o'clock, giving people time who need to go back and forth places time to get there.
And I'll try to have an agenda prepared for Saturday, but one of the issues that I do want to discuss on Saturday, because I think we need a date certain, is e-licensing. So we've got to figure out what we're going to be doing on that. And so a lot of the groups that have an interest in it, I think, plan on being here on Saturday, because I think we're going to wrap it up then and then move on from that topic.
you want to give them a time certain or tell them they have to work late on Friday for that?
Well, I'd rather do it earlier than later, because if I say it's going to be like 2 o'clock and if we wind up getting at 4 o'clock, we haven't got the issue resolved for whatever reason, as I say, we're going to be done by 4.
Yeah.
So plan on doing it earlier on, but since I don't right now know what time we're going to be starting on it, just plan on being here. Probably, I would think, late morning we'd probably get to it, but I should know more, you know, by tomorrow as to when we're going to be on that one. So, any set of rest?
Chairman, is there a rule about how late a conference committee may meet? And if you refresh my mind on how late we can be here?
I think the joint rules, and I'd have to...
I know, actually.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, Representative Khan, yeah.
The joint rules say that they meet until 12, and then on motion can go 1 hour longer
and,
than 12.
Mr. Chairman,
Sarah.
I will vote against any such motion. Put you on notice for that.
Well, obviously the joint rules were set without my participation. I would actually rather start at midnight than end at midnight. But
you don't need to wait.
Well, we have to deal with them as they're written.
Anything else to come before us today? And is there anybody in the audience who has any questions or anything you want to bring to our attention at this time before we adjourn? So as I say, if General Fien.
Mr. Chair, thank you. One thing that I see, one thing coming out of this conference committee, we have to figure out if the Department of Finance is going to stay as the Department of Finance. I think that's critical. But this Minnesota Geospatial Information Office, it just doesn't have a ring to it like LIMIC. So we need to get a different name.
Well, we'll have to get the people, Mr. Chairman. That was the bill that came to me from the Department of Administration. It was all agreed on, and I didn't change it before that, and so we'll have to. So I suggest that you think of what you want, and I don't know why I just think that they felt that their goal was bigger than, well, we just come, we'll make them come in and tell us why they wanted to change it. I didn't see fit to object to it at the time.
I am the Senate author of that bill, and that bill is in the Finance Committee. I'm told I'll get a hearing on it on Tuesday, so I don't know how I'm going to get out of the Finance Committee, get to the Senate, have a Senate position, and so forth, but I'll work on that.
Well,
so
one hint I can give you is I think every place this bill was, it took 3 seconds in terms of it. I didn't, there wasn't
really
a lot of dissension.
I spent time on my bills. Really?
Well, it's actually,
I
consider it a minor miracle when I have a bill that gets out without any dissent.
I would think so too, but that's a different issue. Is there anything else?
In that point, I assure you that whenever a bill appears with my name at the top, it has had extreme scrutiny. Maybe Mrs. Shipman.
As a point in fact, Representative Khan, whenever Mr. Shepard identified it was one of your bills, I made particular notes for that, so that I would know.
In red or purple?
I circled it. So, if there's nothing coming before, we will see you tomorrow at about 1:30. If nothing further, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.